Hello, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Yes, as Cheryl has just said, after my teaching today, we will close down for Thanksgiving so that our staff and our speakers can hang out with their family and friends, and we'll reopen on Sunday morning. But yes, Awakening Together Radio is now broadcasting 24/7. So if you want to listen to Awakening Together Radio over the weekend, you can. And in fact, I enjoy listening to Awakening Together Radio when I'm doing things like cooking, cleaning house. You know, I find that I can't listen to talk radio, which is really what Awakening Together Radio is. I can't listen to talk radio when I'm working. You know, that's kind of, for me, that's like a distraction. I need my attention in one place when I'm, you know, doing work that requires that type of concentration. But there are certainly some types of work that I do, like house cleaning and such, where I absolutely love listening to Awakening Together Radio. So, so yeah, feel free to go there and listen to that over the weekend. This is probably going to be my last teaching from the book of John. You know, unless something happens and we get really slowed down, we're going to end John today. And next week I will still be here, and I am still going to call this time slot the guiding light, but we will be going to a new topic. And as far as I know right now, we will go into MTI 1 Corinthians. If new guidance comes up during the week, then I could show up next week and say, nope, never mind, we're doing this. But MTI 1 Corinthians has kind of been coming to me as the next place to go for the last few weeks. So as far as I know, that's where we're headed next. Last week, we looked at... let's see, where did it end? Oh yeah, we looked at the story of Jesus appearing to Thomas after his resurrection. And we also looked at the story of the miraculous catch of fish. And the way the interpretation came is that we were looking at that desire that we might have for miraculous experiences or mystical experiences, or what I want to call it right now is the fantastic rather than the ordinary. So we were looking at that desire that we can sometimes have for the fantastic. And we were noticing that what Jesus taught, especially when he was speaking to Thomas, in fact, let me see if I can find the exact line. Here it is. He said, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And what we saw is that, you know, Jesus is saying, blessed are those who do not need these fantastic mystical experiences, but just in a very ordinary way, you know, with the heart, are able to come to me. That's the way Krishna would word it, and probably Jesus too. Are able to come to me, which means that without anything fantastic or otherworldly, we still have the heart to go and focus on awareness as our true self, and we still have the heart to leave the ego behind as not our true self. And Jesus says, blessed are those who, again, do not need these fantastic experiences, but have the heart to come to me or come to awareness or come to truth, even among just an ordinary, everyday experience. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that I would not be here if fantastic experiences had not happened to me, maybe. But now that I have reached a certain level of maturity, I appreciate the ordinary in a way that I did not before. And I realize that the fantastic experiences are temporary, when the ordinary holds the eternal. And this, I think, is what Jesus was pointing to. So what I am going to do now is I'm going to play a song, and then we will go into this last part of the book of John. The song that I am going to play is from Laurel Eden. For those of you who don't know, she also has a program here in Awakening Together on Wednesday mornings. The morning starts at 11:30 with Carrie Christensen and A Course of Love for an hour. And then at 12:30, when Carrie ends, Laurel Eden comes on with her weekly mashup, where she looks at the last seven lessons from A Course in Miracles together as a whole, and also plays music and has a beautiful giggle. If you haven't heard her, I think you would really enjoy Laurel Eden. So this is her. That's the song I'm going to play. It is called Love Is. Tell that just by listening to her singing voice, you can tell that she'll have a delightful giggle, and she does. All right, so I am going to begin reading today then. In the book of John, it's the very last story in the book of John. It's in chapter 21, and it starts at verse 15. And the name of this story in my Bible is Jesus Reinstates Peter. So here's the story. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This is the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. And that is the end of the book of John. So it's interesting that Jesus asks Peter, well, it says three times, but actually I count four times. Do you love me? He asks him once. He asks him twice. He asks him a third time. And then it says Peter was hurt because Jesus asked the third time. And then it has Jesus asking for again, so a fourth time, do you love me? And what I hear in that is that we as humans, of course, we have a tendency to be in the head. And those of us who are on the spiritual path, you know, it's typically no different for us in that we are in the head. And our head has become what I often call a spiritual ego, which means that our thoughts, that our thinking can be spiritual thinking. And so if we're asked things like, do you love God? Do you want truth? or similar questions, we answer yes. But in that yes, there's no looking that's happening. There's no looking. In fact, if you're listening to my mini-series right now that I'm offering on Sunday nights, the very first week of the mini-series, when I looked at the importance of the spiritual aspiration, I was reading from Adyashanti's book, The Way of Liberation. And in that book, Adyashanti says something like, very few people have truth as an aspiration. They may think they do, right? But very few people actually have truth as an aspiration. And that isn't anything that we haven't been told here before. We've heard that from Elie Ruzdahl. We've heard that from Michael Langford. And so when Jesus asks Peter four times, do you love me? What I hear in that is, look, You know, look, don't just answer quickly from that spiritual head, from that spiritual thinking. Look. Look within. You know, Adyashanti makes the same recommendation in The Way of Liberation. He talks about how you need to deeply contemplate what your spiritual aspiration is. He talks about deeply contemplating what is most important to you now, what you value the most about the spiritual path now. And he also says, don't assume that you even know. Can you imagine that? Don't assume that you know why you're here, right? Because that assumption that you know why you're here, that's probably at that head level, that spiritual thought level. And so just like Jesus is asking four times, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Adyashanti says to contemplate deeply what we value, what we really want. Not as some goal in the future, he says, but now. And again, if you're listening to my mini-series, then you probably heard me say that I was teaching this. I was teaching Adyashanti's words at the fall retreat. And I decided, you know, to take the advice that was coming out of my own mouth, because as I was teaching this at the fall retreat, you know, I was saying, you know, go back tonight and contemplate deeply, you know, and like Adyashanti says, don't assume you know why you're here. Contemplate deeply. See if you can discover that spiritual aspiration. And when I went back to my room, I thought, you know, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that too. I'm going to see. And when I contemplated deeply, and I did that through, I don't remember what I was reading. Maybe even sometimes when I read three or four things. Some of you may experience that too, where you read a couple of sentences from one thing and then you feel to go open something else and you read a couple of sentences there and then you go open something else. And somehow these sentences from these four different written sources are working together to write a paragraph for you that doesn't exist in any book. But when you get two sentences from four different books by being led, you know, you get the paragraph that you're supposed to see that isn't really written down anywhere. It's like a custom paragraph. So it seems to me that that's what I was doing. I was really looking at multiple sources, if I remember correctly now, just kind of being led from one thing to another, doing a bit of writing and going into contemplation. And when my spiritual aspiration came out, two things occurred. One, I was surprised. I knew it did not come from the head. It was not something that that this head, that this mind would have thought of. And two, I knew that it was perfect, absolutely perfect for me now. Like I knew that this is the spiritual aspiration that will take me to the next step. I knew it without a doubt. I had that inner confirmation. And again, if you were at the fall retreat or if you're listening to my mini-series, then you know that the new spiritual aspiration for me is forget everything, be the present moment and nothing else. It's a beautiful spiritual aspiration for me right now. But if I had stopped, you know, like again, Jesus is asking Peter four times, do you love me? If I had stopped at the head level right after I walked out of teaching at the fall retreat and gone back to the room, Jacqueline went back to the room with me and we were talking about the teaching I'd just done. And I said, well, I think maybe my spiritual aspiration is I want to become more aware of awareness, which sounds good, doesn't it? I want to be more aware of awareness. That's what my head would have picked. And it sounds good. I mean, like you can't really say, oh, that's a bad spiritual aspiration. But it wasn't the one that got picked when I went down, I'll call it four levels. And I let the spiritual aspiration be given. When the spiritual aspiration was given, it wasn't to become more aware of awareness. It was to forget everything. Forget everything. Be the spontaneous present moment and nothing else. And this, by the way, is why I am feeling right now, unless something else comes up in the next week, why I am feeling to go to NTI 1 Corinthians next. This came to me shortly after the spiritual aspiration came, to go back into NTI 1 Corinthians and look at it very deeply, because NTI 1 Corinthians is all about the empty shell. NTI 1 Corinthians is all about forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. That's what it's all about. So that's why I feel like that might be where I'm going next. But here we have Jesus. It's interesting that the name of this story in my Bible is Jesus Reinstates Peter. Now, it's funny because when I look at the word reinstate, you know, I think of like if we kick somebody out of Awakening Together for misbehaving, which we don't do that. We might not let them in the sanctuary, but we don't kick people out of Awakening Together. But let's imagine that we did, you know, like the Catholics do that, the Jehovah's Witnesses do that. Let's imagine that we kick somebody out of our membership because of their, you know, misbehavior. Then reinstate would mean, you know, we thought that they had repented and that they had changed, and we would reinstate them into Awakening Together membership, right? That's what the word reinstate means to me. But the funny thing is, I can't find anywhere in the Bible where Jesus ever kicked Peter out. He never kicked Peter out. So why does he have to reinstate him? What does that mean, reinstates? He reinstates Peter. Well, the interpretation that I am receiving is that he brings Peter back to the heart. He brings Peter back to the heart. Peter had drifted up into the spiritual ego, and this can happen to every one of us, and my guess is it does happen to every one of us at some point. So drifted out of the heart, out of the purpose that originally brought him on this spiritual path, drifted up into the spiritual ego, the spiritual thinking, and now he is being reinstated by being brought back down to the heart with this question: do you truly love me? 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 Right? Because the heart never changed. The heart never changed. It's not like the heart became a spiritual ego. Somehow the awareness, I'll call it, the awareness of where we put our attention can drift away from the heart and into the spiritual head. So we can drift over to the head and start thinking and acting from there. But the heart never changes. So all we have to do is be pointed back to the heart, which is still perfectly aligned with truth. And in an instant, bam, we're right back. And in fact, for me, I have taught this many, many times. So, you know, if you've been listening to me very long, you've probably heard this. For me, this is the purpose of the spiritual aspiration. The spiritual aspiration is to help with current moment discernment. It's like asking myself, what do I truly want? You know, so if I start finding that my mind drifts to, what do you guys think of me? Like, do you guys think that I'm, you know, awake? Or do you guys think that I'm wise? And I start planning in my head how I'm going to say things in order to get you guys to see me in a certain way. See, that's the spiritual ego, right? That's drifted up into the thinking. But when I notice that the awareness has drifted up into the thinking, what I can do is I can ask myself, this has been my practice for the last 12 years or so, I can ask myself, what do I truly want? And when I ask, what do I truly want, I drop those four levels down to the heart. And the moment I drop down to the heart, my desire for you guys to see me in a certain way, it grows strangely dim, to quote Francesca Battistelli. I no longer care. It's not my focus. My focus is not what you think about me. Do you see me as awake? Do you see me as wise? Instead, I'm right back to forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. I've always called my spiritual aspiration my true north. Because when I ask that question, what do I truly want? And I move back into the heart, I am instantly right back on that straight and narrow path again, instead of drifting off. And I actually think that this happens to a lot of people. I'm kind of reminded now of, you remember that TV show when we were little that had Will Robinson, the little boy, and his friend, it had something to do with space, like out in space or something like that. You may remember the name better than me. But they lived out in lost in space. That's it, lost in space. And remember, the robot, whenever there was danger nearby, would start waving his hands and going, "Warning, warning, Will Robinson! Warning, warning, Will Robinson!" Remember that? I feel like this is something that we need to be aware of. You know, we don't need to put our heads in the sand and realize that the spiritual ego tempts everyone. You know, and some people, the spiritual ego shows up in different ways. Some people become very involved in caring about whether their books get published or whether people are showing up at their teachings. Other people, you know, get caught up in, you know, clothing. Do I dress spiritual? Do I look spiritual? Words? Are my words spiritual words? Do I sound spiritual when I talk? You know, it shows up in all kinds of ways. You know, denying the fact that I have a cold because it's not spiritual to have a cold. You know, whatever. It shows up in so many ways. I couldn't sit here and list them all. But I know you guys know what I'm talking about. And you know why you know what I'm talking about? Because every one of us have experienced the spiritual ego to one degree or another. So warning, warning, Will Robinson. This happens. And the reason we experience that spiritual ego is the ego is actually pretty, pretty cunning. And when we adopt a true interest in awakening, the ego knows that in order to tempt us away from that true interest, it has to kind of look similar to that true interest. You know, so it has to have a spiritual look, but it brings us right back into the thinking. The poser, Kathy says. Yeah, the poser. So the purpose of the spiritual aspiration, what do I truly want? And I love the way Jesus is demonstrating it here. Let's just go ahead and practice that. What do I truly want? 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 It just brings you right back down to the heart and right back down to your spiritual aspiration, and the spiritual ego grows strangely dim. Suddenly, it's just not so important whether it was selling the books or getting people to see me a certain way or whatever. Suddenly, it's not so important. And in fact, I'm going to go ahead and take a break and play Francesca Battistelli. Let me find her. Here it is. This is Francesca Battistelli. Strangely Dim.
Sometimes where I stand on this narrow road, is it a raging storm or a valley?
So Jesus reinstates Peter by bringing him back to the heart, which has never changed, was never distracted, right? and Peter is right back again. Now, what's also interesting about this particular story, Jesus reinstates Peter, is that he also, each time he asks Peter, do you love me? He also asks Peter to feed my lambs, to take care of my sheep, and to feed my sheep. This is a genuine calling for some people, not for everyone. But there are people who have an internal, built-in assignment to take care of my sheep. That is their job. I think in the Buddhist, tradition, they're called, I don't know if I know how to say the word, bodhisattvas or something like that. Is that correct, those of you who know the Buddhist tradition? The ones who seem to keep coming back. Yeah, keep coming back. Keep coming back. And keep coming back. And these people, I don't think, are born with the realization of why they're here. But at some point during the lifetime, something happens where they receive that calling, and they know their job. They know why they are here. And it's interesting because Jesus tells Peter, he's talking to Peter about this coming back. He's talking to Peter, you know, Peter is going to come back. He is not going to awaken beyond the wheel of reincarnation. He is coming back, and maybe multiple times. And he's actually talking to Peter about this, and he asks him to come back and to take care of the sheep, and then he tells him what his future lifetimes are going to be like. He tells him that in the first part of his life, you know, when he comes back to these bodhisattva lifetimes, that the first part of his life, he will have free will. You know, so if he comes back as a, I don't know, I'm just trying to make up a name now, I'll just say John Smith. If he comes back as John Smith, born in L.A., you know, he may spend the first part of his life surfing and chasing beautiful girls and doing whatever. But then he says, but when you're old, he says, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go, which means John Smith, you know, I don't know what old is, we'll say 40. Oh, that would have been old in the point of view of somebody in Jesus' time. So John Smith, when he's 40, will suddenly receive this calling. And his whole life will turn on a dime. And he will have no choice about this. And this is going to happen time and time and time again. And my experience is that there are people who have this experience, where the first half of their life they are whatever personality they are born into, and they seem to have free will and they live that personality to the fullest, and then there's a switch, and none of them can explain why the switch happens. Amoda Ma might be one of these people. If you listen to her story, there was a switch. To be honest, in my life, there was a switch. It just changed. And then after that, the person is no longer in charge of their life. So it's comforting to know, I think, maybe for some people, to know these bodhisattvas are out there. These people who are brought into this world in order to take care of us, in order to help the rest of us not stray. This is what a shepherd does, right? Without a shepherd, sheep stray. That's what sheep do. And these people are brought into this world lifetime after lifetime after lifetime And at some point, their shepherd homing device is turned on, and then they then become what we could call very clear teachers, very clear guides. And it's amazing their wisdom. It's amazing how their wisdom just goes like that. It's like they didn't have to learn. You know, so many people, they'll study something, you know, A Course in Miracles or something else for years and years and years, and they still, even after years and years of studying, they still have this clarity that is not perfectly crisp, right? They can get confused very easily, you know. That's the sheep effect. But the bodhisattva, or whatever we want to call this one, that is brought into the world, once they shift, their clarity is just clear. They don't get confused. They didn't have to learn it. It just, boom, it's like it was dropped on them. So, I don't know if there's anything else to say about that other than they're there. You know, if you're a bodhisattva, if you're a person who had that shift that happened very quickly, everything changed, you're no longer in charge of your life, you have this clarity that just came to you crystal clear, I mean, you know it. You know it. But if not, all that means is that these ones are brought here for your benefit. And so when you recognize someone with that clarity, be willing to listen to them. I remember Jan Fraser talking about that one time. I think it's in her first book about when fear falls away. I think it's near the end of her first book, When Fear Falls Away. She says something about how, you know, most people in the world really don't know what they're talking about, even though they think they do. But then she's very clear about there. However, there are some who do know what they're talking about. And if you come across one of those, she says you should sit down and listen. I think it's funny how the ego wants us to deny this. First of all, the ego would probably want to say that in order for somebody to have that kind of clarity, they need to be enlightened. My experience is that's not true, necessarily. That the clarity turns on, they have the clarity, they have the guidance, but they're not maybe yet what we would call enlightened. But then also there's those teachings such as the ones from A Course in Miracles, which I actually don't think is from A Course in Miracles. Let me correct myself. I don't think the teaching is from A Course in Miracles. I think the teaching is from the Course in Miracles community, from the culture. And that teaching is, if somebody's still in a body, then they still have lessons to learn. I don't need to listen to them. It's that idea. And that's not at all what this teaching is saying. This teaching is, no, there are people who are brought in lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, and yeah, they get half their lives to be that personality and play, but then this switch happens, and they don't have a choice. They're my shepherds, and I've put them out there everywhere. They're everywhere, and they are there to help you, to guide you, so that you don't stray. And again, on an individual perspective, somebody who knows they're not a shepherd might say, I love the way Cheryl's saying, I love that. Thank you, Cheryl, for saying that. I was going to say, some people might say, well, gosh, I'm not a shepherd, and may feel all, you know, dejected. But the purpose of the shepherds is love from the one mind. You know, nobody, it doesn't say anywhere that whoever these shepherds are, it doesn't say they were picked out because they were better than you. You know, you have to look at this as a oneness. As a oneness, we have selected shepherds to help us all wake up. It's a gift we have given to ourselves. And so it is something to celebrate. It is something to say, I love that. And again, if we feel that we know someone who is a shepherd, it's really great to listen to them, right? It's really great to let them be the shepherd, let them guide us, let them help keep us on that straight and narrow path. Now, what's interesting here is, Jesus, after he reinstates Peter and he asks Peter to be one of these shepherds, Jesus and Peter start walking off and John is following. And Peter's like, well, what about him? And Jesus says, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? I'll tell you what my mind says about this. And this is something the shepherds may need to listen to. The shepherds are not the first to awaken. The shepherds, in fact, may be the last to awaken. The shepherds have to be willing to go lifetime after lifetime helping other people awaken. Without having that shift or experience themselves. Because their job is to help awaken. Their job is to help awaken. And so they keep coming back and helping others awaken. And they need to be able to put their ego aside enough that the people around them are awakening and they're not. That just means they're doing their job really well if they're helping others to awaken. It's not anything that the shepherd is to be concerned about. So what this says, if any of you are feeling dejected, that you might be a sheep instead of a shepherd, right? What this actually says is that the sheep are going to awaken before the shepherd. You might think of the shepherd as like a person that's standing at the threshold, takes your hand and helps you across the threshold. That's what they do. They take your hand and they help you across the threshold, but they themselves can't cross the threshold because if they cross the threshold, they aren't there to help you across. So the shepherd needs to be unconcerned with what I'm going to call, for lack of better words right now, personal awakening. The shepherd needs to be focused on universal awakening and celebrate each awakening that happens and not worry that this I here has not had that experience of awakening yet. The shepherd just needs to be willing to be the shepherd. And then, you know, once everyone, you know, we could say, has crossed that threshold, then the shepherds can cross the threshold. Yeah, Dove says different roles in totality, and they all work together. They all work together. So it is true that at the end of Peter's lifetime, he was crucified. And in fact, Peter, as far as I know, Peter was not a perfectly healed mind, and in fact, what I call the I am bad thought was actually still alive in Peter's mind and gave him challenges throughout his lifetime. So at the end of his lifetime, when they went to crucify him, he said that he was not worthy to be crucified in the way that his master was, and he asked to be hung upside down. So Peter was actually crucified upside down. And John, who apparently outlived Peter, interpreted these words that Jesus said to Peter as if he was predicting that death. And so it says that right here in the Bible. Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." And then it says, but this is John's commentary, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Actually, whenever I read John, I find that there are a few places, you know, maybe four or five places, where John interjects his interpretation of what this meant. And each time the feeling is that actually he was off. He didn't know. His interpretation was coming from the head. So watch for that when you're reading. When John quits just reporting and interjects his little, this is what that meant. It seems like every time he does that, he's off. He doesn't really know. At least at the time of the writing. And that is the end of the book of John. So the book of John is a pretty awesome book. In some ways, you know, it might be the most awesome book in the Bible, you know, read with clarity. And I don't know that I have anything else to say at this point. Does anybody have a question for me as we end this reading of the book of John. You do have a question for me. Okay, Patricia, how about, I don't know if you want to take the mic or if you want to type your question in. Let me let go of the mic and see if you take it. Okay, so I will wait for you to type. Take your time. I will say while we're waiting for Patricia that if you haven't been listening to my mini-series on Sunday nights and you want to go back and listen to it, you can go to the Awakening Together website underneath Audios mini-series, and you'll find the first two recordings. It's a six-week mini-series. You'll find the first two recordings there. And so you could listen and catch up. And then I will be there this Sunday night teaching the third installment of that mini-series live. Okay, so Patricia says, when you said about someone else will dress you, can you deepen the meaning, please? Yes. So what that means is what I was talking about, the bodhisattvas. That means that the person who is born into this world to be a shepherd, to be one of the guides, again, the first half of their life, they have the free will to live the life of the personality. And there's a benefit to that, by the way. There's a benefit in that they get to remember what it's like to be human. And so when they're guiding later, they're guiding from a remembrance of what it's like to be human. If they were born into that clarity, you know, in a lifetime, they would not know how to interact with other people. They wouldn't understand other people's worries, other people's fears, other people's goals, other people's drives, right? So the first half of their life, they live as the personality in the culture that they were born in. But then at some point, there's like this switch that occurs and their whole life changes. And from that point on, they no longer have control over their life. They are pulled into a surrender. It's not like they consciously surrender. They're pulled into a surrender and they're obviously willing, you know, but it just happens to them. And that's what someone else would dress you. That's what it's referring to. This is the switch from having the free will of a person to being pulled into the surrender. And some of you guys have heard my story. Let me just tell you my story again really quick as an illustration. And Amoda Ma's story is also, I think, another illustration. But my story was, again, living the first half of my life the way I wanted to. I had set many goals. Personal goals, professional goals, and I actually came to the point where I had achieved all of my goals. I had done everything that I had dreamed of doing in this lifetime. And so then I just started to ask, now what? You know, just like, now what? And when I started to ask, now what, I remembered A Course in Miracles, which I had bought years before but didn't take to. I remembered that book, and I was guided to go back to that book. And so when I was going back, I decided to take it with me. You've heard this story. I decided to take it with me on vacation and start it on vacation because it seemed like there was more free time in my life. It would be a good time to start it. And my vacation was like only a week away or so when all this happened anyway, 1 or 2 weeks away. So I took A Course in Miracles with me on the Disney cruise. And before I opened the course and started the course, I decided to say a prayer. And, you know, that's just because of the tradition I was raised in. You say a prayer before you start something holy, kind of like Bismillah. You know, it's kind of the Bismillah action. For those of you who know the Sufi term Bismillah, the prayer was the Bismillah. And so I was getting ready to say my prayer, and then as I was saying my prayer, and I don't even remember what I was saying, something came down over me. You've heard me tell this story a million times. Something came down over me. Remember, it wasn't my choice to surrender. The surrender happened. And I heard myself say, I will learn whatever you want me to learn. I will do whatever you want me to do. Just make me useful for the rest of my life. And it was about 2 months after that that I began having visions, which taught me clarity, and nighttime dreams that taught me clarity. And within about 6 months, I started hearing the Holy Spirit as an inner voice and was guided to write with the inner spirit and teach what I write. So this all just, it happened. So this is kind of what the shepherd's experience is. And again, if you listen to Amoda Ma's story, you're going to hear a very, very similar story. You know, she just had this vision. and through the vision, she was told to go and teach. And everything changed. Boom. Right? Just like that. Boom. So there are many, I'm sure, who have this experience of the first half of their life. They have free will. And the second half of their life, they are sucked into a surrender. And their life is no longer their own. And that's the Peter or the Bodhisattva. And again, these people are here to help everyone else over the threshold, which means they have to be willing to help others awaken. Right? They have to help others across the threshold. So that's, you know, if that's perceived as a downside, that would be the downside of being the Bodhisattva. But I don't think anyone who has that assignment feels that it's a downside. And in fact, those who have that assignment, I think, also naturally feel willing to come back multiple times. It's like built into the heart. So and I think I've heard Dove express that he might have this. You know, I think I've heard him express that he might have at least a little bit of this in him before. Is that right, Dove? Yeah, he says he took the oath. Yeah. Yeah. So, any other questions? Yeah, just when he was about 40. That's funny. And for me, the change happened when I was 44. So it's funny. Well, tell you what, since we are running out of time, I'm sorry, we're not out of time, but I am out of words. Since we are out of words, why don't I just play a short song, and then I think Cheryl said she had some announcements she wanted to make. Oh, you want me to talk about my experience in Costa Rica? Well, you know, that's very, well, it's interesting for me, because what you heard me say in Costa Rica is that one thing that has happened for me is that the future and the past have collapsed. I know you probably heard me say that. I don't know if you remember, but I said that. And so as a result, anything as far away as Costa Rica, which was a whole week ago, less than a week ago actually, but anything that far away, I now have a very thin memory of it because it's not here now. So like I can say things like, I met a lot of great new friends. And I saw some cute animals, and it rained a lot, and it was muddy, and the food was really good, and damn that, Cheryl, I gained 7 pounds in 1 week, Cheryl, damn you, but I'm already losing it, you know. Cheryl's a good cook. But, you know, I can't say, yeah, 7 pounds, but it's falling off already. It's falling off already. You know, and if you gain it that quick, you can lose it that quick too. But, you know, it's hard for me to really go into deep detail about Costa Rica. I can say it was a wonderful experience. I'm really glad that I went. When I was there, I genuinely felt that I belonged there. But the truth is, wherever I am, I genuinely feel that I belong there. In fact, I was interviewed at the end of Costa Rica by Jason for this little film he's making. And a question that he asked me was, you know, what changed? What changed in you as a result of this trip? And the answer was nothing. I mean, nothing. You know, when I was on the plane coming here and the plane was delayed and all of that, I felt the same presentness and joy that I feel here, being here. So nothing has changed. That presentness, joy, that's what's constant. And the rest of the experience is through that filter or somehow behind that. Like the presentness joy is the present experience. It's the direct experience, and everything else is behind that. So Costa Rica is subordinate to present joy. Being on the plane, subordinate to present joy. Being back here teaching and awakening together, subordinate to awakening joy, present joy. So this present joy, which also I think could be called awakening joy, I think it's a fair Freudian slip. It's the direct experience, and everything else is secondary. So I couldn't say that anything changed, but I did love meeting the new people. Carmen is here, Carmen Gonzalez 3737. You know, I didn't know her a week and a half ago. Now I do. Hello, Carmen. Cheryl, of course, I got to know a lot better. You know, I knew Cheryl a little, and I got to know Cheryl a lot better, and that was really a great joy for me. Our Awakening Together minister, Bart Craig, Reverend Bart Craig. I knew Bart well because he was in my MPP class for 2 years, but I'd never met him in physical body. So I got to meet him in physical body. That was a great joy. I shared rooms with Maria Felipe and Lori Coburn, both of which I knew of but didn't know well, and got to know them well. That was a great joy. So for me, the great joy, other than eating Cheryl's food, was just getting to know everyone. And yeah, Dove said that he had heard wonderful things about my teaching, and he wanted to know, you know, what I did. Was it recorded? And I told him it was just the same teaching I always do. And then maybe the difference was this audience wasn't as familiar with Regina's teaching, so they were hearing it more for the first time. But, you know, any of the teachings I did there, I've done before, and I will continue to do. Yeah, my teaching on the four principles of God. I do tend to do that teaching more at retreats than in the sanctuary, because it's helpful to have a visual. As you saw, even there, we had to go to the store and buy a poster board so that I could draw the visual. So I do that teaching more at retreats, but I've been teaching that for 3-4 years now, ever since 2013, I think I started teaching that. I had the realization in 2012. So there was really nothing new. I talked about the Tao, right, the swinging of the pendulum, which I also taught at the CMC conference. So there was another teaching, too, that I don't remember what I did, but it was a funny teaching because it was raining so hard, and we were outside, and it was really raining hard. And we were under a shelter, so we weren't getting wet, but it was very, very loud. And I had to yell the entire teaching. So for an hour and a half, 2 hours, however long I was teaching, I was literally yelling at the top of my lungs. And after that, my voice didn't work so well the rest of the day. So, yeah. All right, so I didn't have to play a song. I did some chatting. And like I said, next week, as far as I know, the guiding light will continue, but we will go into NTI 1 Corinthians unless some other guidance comes between now and then. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving, and I will see you all on Sunday morning. And Cheryl, I'm turning the mic back over to you.